It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. I am your host, Taylor McLeod, alongside my co-host, Jack Michael, and we'll be here for the next hour breaking down the 113-101 Boston Celtics loss to the Toronto Raptors. You know, Celtics went up to Toronto, started off the season Tuesday night with a victory over the Sixers, went up to Toronto tonight, got beat 113-101. I think the game had... No, I wouldn't call it a playoff vibe. I think it's too early in the season to say playoff vibe, definitively. But the game had a high-intensity level throughout the entire thing, but ratcheted up in the fourth quarter. I mean, the Celtics were within, a handful of points of the Raptors, and then the Raptors just poured it on. Went on a 10-0 run. Serge Ibaka was eating on both ends of the floor, collecting offensive rebounds, and then with hitting the jump hook to get buckets, and then... Kawhi Leonard, new Raptor, doing his thing, and Kyle Lowry taking charges, drilling threes on the other end. Danny Green, another new Raptor, drilling threes on the other end. The Raptors put it all together at the end of the fourth, and the Celtics didn't. They had opportunities. A lot of missed shots tonight. Aaron Baines had a bunch of missed tips. Jalen missed a couple, easy layups. I think it would be easy, especially as Boston sports fans, to sit here and think about everything the Celtics did wrong, but to kick things off, I have to give the Raptors their credit. This team hasn't been together very long. Kawhi's new, Danny Green's new coach and Nick Nurse. And to come out in, their biggest game of this young season and play like they did, it really shows that they're going to be a force in the East no matter what anyone says. A lot of people have the Celtics penciled in as the number one seed, penciled in as the Eastern Conference finalist, penciled in as an NBA finalist. Toronto played like a team that's capable of doing, whatever they want this season. Jack, what'd you think of the Raptors' performance tonight?
Yeah, my biggest takeaway from that game was the Raptors are a way better team than the 76ers. And that's not to knock the 76ers at all. Lord knows I've done that enough. But, the roster construction of the Raptors is miles ahead of where Philly is right now. The Raptors, you kind of mentioned it, they're more of a cohesive kind of team. They have a more solid wing core than the 76ers have. They have more solid guard play than the 76ers have. It's not just, two guys that are going to do everything on the floor for you and then a bunch of, kind of scrubs. It's a cohesive team with a lot of players that could do multiple things, play multiple positions, guard multiple positions, all of that stuff.
Yeah, throughout the preseason, I talked a lot about how the Celtics were so versatile and how they all their players are capable of doing so many things on the floor. And if you look at the Raptors, they have a lot of guys with the same kind of skill sets. Obviously, Kyle Lowry is a point guard, just like Kyrie is a point guard. They both of them are scoring point guards, not great on defense, get the job done when they need to. But then from there on out, you look at the Raptors, it's just, Danny Green is great on defense, knocks down the three. Pascal Siakam, he didn't play especially well tonight, but he played well enough. He collected a couple boards and surprised me by bringing the ball down, more than a handful of times. A little rough with the handle, but still just his capability to do it. Kawhi is Kawhi. I don't need to say anything about him. And Serge had a tough end of last season, especially in that Cleveland series. LeBron tortured him for 3 years in the playoffs, and tonight he ate. No bones about it. The guy ate. If you look at the stats, 21-14. Or no. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Yeah. 21-6 on 71.4% from the floor. I mean, the guy played like
10 of 14.
Soccer. Yeah. He was just – he played so well. The entire Raptors team played so well, even their bench. A lot is, made of the Celtics' depth in their bench, but if you look at the Raptors, they got the same thing going on over there. I mean, you guys got guys like OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet. They're just a super talented team. And I don't know much about Nick Nurse. I didn't know much about Nick Nurse coming into the season, but all his interviews tonight, he seems like a guy who's really composed. And that's not to say that Dwayne Casey wasn't, but in their first two games of the season, especially tonight, it just feels there's a different feeling about this Toronto Raptors team, and they're a team you have to look out for, especially if you're the Celtics, because all offseason long, it was LeBron's gone, Celtics number one seed, Celtics going to the finals. You've got another team that's going to be formidable.
Yeah, and if you look at the minutes breakdown for, you know, the Celtics and the Raptors tonight, the Raptors went 10 deep, and I don't think, maybe apart from Norman Powell, I don't think there was a guy that they had out on the floor that you could say didn't do anything, or you could say didn't have at least some sort of impact. You know, C.J. Miles missed all four of his threes, but he's still a threat out there. Like, he's not a guy that you could just leave, and he was their ninth guy in the rotation tonight. So that it's, you know, like we've been saying, like we've been reiterating the whole time, it's not just a one-team thing in the East with the Boston Celtics. It's the Celtics and the Raptors with, you know, potentially the 76ers, you know, lagging a little bit behind. But the Raptors are not going to be, you know, some pushover team. They were still the one seed in the East last year, and they were the one seed for a reason. They won the most games. You know, they're not just some pushover team, some scrub team.
No. It hurt a lot of Raptors fans to see DeMar DeRozan, you know, leave in the trade for Kawhi. But what you get in Kawhi Leonard is, no offense to DeRozan, he's a great player in his own right, but you just get such a dynamic player. DeRozan struggled on the defensive end of the floor, and Kawhi locks up anybody he guards. And if he's going to go give you, you know, 31-10 on 40% from the field and 40% from three, that's an MVP caliber player. I think a lot of people last season forgot how good this guy was because he didn't play. And I don't blame anyone for that. You know, it's the new toy effect. Everyone else is actually playing, so of course they're going to forget about the guy. But 2 years ago, Kawhi Leonard, a top three player in the NBA, and it wasn't debatable. It was LeBron, KD, Kawhi in any order. Everyone had that as their top three. Obviously, other guys creep in, but he was at least a top five player. And you think back to his last playoff series, right before he exited against the Warriors in 2017, it would have been, he had the Spurs up 26. You know, he's an incredible player, and he showed it again tonight. Is he going to be flashy, you know, show off in your face, say anything in your face? Absolutely not. The guy's a robot. If you watch him shoot free throws, it's one of the most mechanical, robotic things I've ever seen. But he gets the job done, and he got the job done tonight.
Yeah, and like you said, people do forget how good he is. And I thought that, at least in the first half, the Celtics did a great job one-on-one against him. You know, they had Jalen on him in the first quarter, they started with Jalen on him, and then they put Gordon Hayward on him for a little bit, and it didn't go as well, which I guess you could is to be expected because Gordon is, you know, still returning from an exploded ankle. But then also I was intrigued with how Al was able to handle him one-on-one on the perimeter a couple times. But like you said, it didn't matter. He still got to his spots. He hit every little turnaround. He hit threes. He hit free throws. He hits everything. You know, his offensive game is so complete. He scores at every level, right? He has handles. He has a shot. He has everything.
Yeah, and I think he had 9 points in the first half. Finished the game with 31. And the telltale sign for me that they were going to just try to feed him in the second half was when they started to put Kyrie in pick and roll to get Kyrie switched onto Kawhi. And Kyrie Irving's my favorite basketball player outside of LeBron James. But the guy isn't the best defender. He's not a good defender, I wouldn't say. So when you've got an MVP-type player and he's switching on him and pick and roll almost every possession, you know, it's not going to go well. But, you know, down the stretch, it didn't go well for anybody. He got to every spot, hit every shot. So, you know, Kawhi Leonard really dominated tonight. The Toronto Raptors really dominated tonight. And that's not to say that the Celtics played poorly, because they didn't. I mean, they made mistakes. There were missed opportunities, but if you look at the scoring distribution, you have 21 from Kyrie, 16 from Tatum, 14 from Horford, 14 from Hayward, and 13 from Brown. You're looking at their starting five. They play well. It's not they didn't play well. The Raptors were just better.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And obviously this scoring breakdown that you just mentioned, it's kind of a reverse from the other night where Jason Tatum was the leader and then everyone was kind of behind. But, you know, I think in the beginning of the game, Jason looked like he was struggling to get to his spots a little bit. I think everyone was kind of had a little jitters in the first quarter. It was a little messy, even for the Raptors as well. But what I was not really a fan of tonight was the bench scoring. You know, the Celtics went 9 deep tonight with, you know, every bench player other than Aaron Baines playing 20-plus minutes. But they only got, what, 23 points out of the bench, which, yeah. You know, you could say that's good. You could say that's bad. You know, 23 out of 101 isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. But, you know, Terry didn't shoot exactly well. Marcus, you know, obviously he's not going to shoot like he did against Philly the other night. But, you know, he shot 1 of 6 from the field. That's not, you know, that's not great when you want him to at least get attention on the perimeter. I do think Marcus ran the pick and roll the best out of anyone tonight, but he is going to have to hit some mid-range shots if he wants to do anything, because I think his only bucket was that kind of tripping out of bounds, maybe should have been called a travel layup.
Right. I think that's a really good point. And I don't want to pick on Smart. I did enough of that last year. The Smart conversations become exhausting at a point. But with how well everyone played at the end of last year, and you get all these weapons back, and you know, Hayward and Kyrie, and you know, Tatum took another step, Jaylen's going to take another step, I think people will give less respect to Marcus Smart on the offensive end, no matter how much he shoots. So it's up to him to demand that respect. He had plenty of opportunities tonight where he came off a screen, you know, had a free throw line jumper and bricked it. That can't happen when you're playing against the best teams in the NBA and the best teams in your conference.
Yeah,
it just can't happen.
Yeah, and it like you said, it had been spoken on a lot last year how even with, you know, his suspect three-point shooting, his bad three-point shooting, his historically bad three-point shooting, you know, he still got the respect on the perimeter behind the three-point line as a shooter, even though, you know, people knew he really wasn't going to hit them. But, and like you said, the best teams aren't necessarily going to do that now if he's not even going to shoot them. You know, he took 2 threes tonight. I think one was an air ball. And if he's going to shoot, you know, 3-4-plus a game, then that becomes a threat. Then it's like, all right, he's definitely going to hit, you know, one or two of these. But if he airballs and he looks tentative and he looks like he really wants to pound it into the paint, then that's a sign for teams that they're just going to sag off of him.
Right, I agree. Before we go any further, I do want to remind you that we do have a toll-free call line, 347-215-7771. Again, 347-215-7771. Call in, give your takes, air your grievances. Jack and I will be here till 11:30 taking calls. Before we hit the phone lines, I do want to talk to you or play a quick commercial about Boston Barber and Tattoo.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
So thanks again to Boston Barber and Tattoo. I do want to get to these call-ins. We got a couple callers waiting up. 941, what do you got for me?
Yes, Nick Sacento in Tampa.
What's up, Nick? How are you?
What's going on, Taylor?
Not a whole lot, man. Tough game. Tough end of the fourth quarter for sure. I felt pretty good throughout the fourth. You know, I thought we were going to get one of those 2017 Celtics runs. You know, Kyrie goes in a little bit of a run. You know, Jason Tatum gets it going. And all of a sudden, the Raptors came out like a bat out of hell and put 10 on them real quick.
Sure did. I guess I'll start with the positives first. I don't have too much to say about the game. Pretty much a letdown. It seemed like the Raptors kind of came in with a purpose, and the Celtics still trying to kind of just get into a groove. I was happy to see Gordon Hayward probably have his best game, including preseason, since coming back from the injury. I know it's a small sample size, but he really seemed to kind of, you know, be back into his game. Not the old Gordon Hayward, but, you know, definitely contributed something, was relatively efficient, you know, 6-for-13, that's almost 50% shooting. I was glad to see Gordon Hayward in his limited minutes, you know, put up some points, grab some rebounds, throw some assists. Al Horford, average Al again, almost a triple-double. Was happy to see, you know, Al Horford. With a full, healthy team, Al Horford shouldn't have to score more than 14 points. But Kyrie Irving, if he's not going to score more than 21, you need somebody else on that list of players, whether it's Jaylen Brown, whether it's Jason Tatum, whether it's Al Horford. Somebody else has to score 20 points. The rest of the box score aside from the bench, and I'll get to that in a second. The rest of the box score looks good. I mean, individually, I'm not mad at Jaylen Brown's 13 points. He shot 50% from the field, 50% from three. The team as a whole shot almost 40% from three. They hit more three-pointers than the Raptors. So, you know, the three-pointers were hitting. The one thing I will say is I think, a big difference in the game, and you can probably, it's not the difference in the game in the score, but shooting twice as many free throws, the Raptors, I mean, that's a lot of home cooking, especially for the second game of the season. That's a little bit strange to me. Other than that, I would just like, and I know you already mentioned it, and I know you think it's getting old, but there's a new dynamic to the Marcus Smart talk, and that's the fact that he's getting paid $13 million a year to shoot bricks from the free throw line. I've been asking this question since Marcus Smart has been in the league. What is his go-to offensive move? He drives to the paint, and he never looks to score. As soon as you see him driving to the paint, his head is turning to find somebody that he can pass to. And while I love the fact that he had 6 assists and 0 turnovers, which is better than last year's average of assist-to-turnover ratio of 2 assists, or 1 turnover for every 2 assists, which is terrible, I'm glad that he had 6 assists and 0 turnovers.
Yeah.
But, buddy, you're playing 22 minutes, 1 for 6 from the field, 0 for 2 from 3 and 2 points. You got to hit something. Now that he's part of the Boston Celtics, he has a future with Boston unless, I mean, they signed him for a mid-range $13 million contract for the potential of maybe – you know, packaging up in the future. I don't see that happening, but maybe he's got to do something, and I think teams are going to start backing away from him the way they backed away from Rondo, the way they back away from other players that just proved they can't shoot. If he's going to hit 1 for 9 as he frequently went last season from 3, teams are just going to say, why bother? Why bother even, closing out on him, because he's not going to hit him. That's my biggest beef in this game. He wasn't even in the game to close the game. I didn't see him shut anybody down, particularly well in this game. I mean, I know Kyle Lowry is capable of more than 15 points, but Van Vliet outplayed Marcus Smart today, and I don't think – does Van Vliet make more than $13 million a year? I don't really know too much about Van Vliet. But, I mean, when you make $13 million – you kind of got to start producing, and that's my big beef. I know Marcus Smart had a better game last game, but that's my big thing. I think Marcus Smart needs to do better. Because 6 assists is fantastic, but look down the box score.
Everybody on this team can pass. I think that leads into an interesting point, and, thank you, Nick, for the call. I think what that leads into, that talk about Smart, is that you've got this guy who has shown over and over again that he's not the best offensive player, even close to the best offensive player. And his calling card has always been defense, but when you've got a team that's so deep who can go 5 guys who are good on defense and good on offense, I think that's where you start to see some of the issues and some of the discussions that will happen this year. What is his role on this team? Is he going to be with that closing 5? Because honestly, in my opinion, I don't think he's going to be on that closing 5 because I don't think he's one of the 5 best players on the team. If he's hot or if he's on a defensive role or something like that, obviously. But I don't know how he fits. And I know the contract situation. I think that's what I think has gotten old. Last year we talked Rozier or Smart, should they pay Smart, should they pay Smart all season long. And I think that's what's exhausting. I don't mind talking about him on the floor. And I think Nick brings up a good point with the contract because, if he's going to be here for 4 years and going to be here, for what hopes to be championship contending run, he's got to have a role.
Yeah, and just to speak on the closing unit thing really quick, because tonight I think Jaylen was also left out of the closing unit. It's a conversation that happens a lot, and I think Brad really does have the luxury this year of kind of going with the hot hand. We spoke about it after Tuesday's game against Philly, where Kyrie Irving was, obviously taken out of the game with 4 minutes to go. That game was obviously out of reach for the Sixers at that point, though, but I digress. So I really do think Brad has that luxury of being able to kind of put in whatever players are playing the best at the end of the game, knowing if something happens, he has
you know, a starter level or at least an average level NBA player sitting on the bench to come right in if he needs it to. So, and it, like, and if he does have that buy-in from the players, if he does have all the guys on the same page, you know, they know that, you know, Kyrie Irving can get subbed out of the game with 4 minutes to go. Kyrie Irving, and if Kyrie Irving's fine with that, why shouldn't, you know, Marcus Smart be?
Right.
But there is the question of, yeah, and then there's also, you know, offense, defense, where I definitely do want Marcus Smart on the floor for a defensive possession with 5 seconds left. So I think the question of his role on the team is, I don't think, or how should I put this? Maybe it's not so much a question of his role on the team, but kind of how he can still make a contribution without the ball in his hand as much. Maybe I'll say that, because we did end the season without Kyrie Irving last year, without Gordon Hayward last year. And people were bringing up, now that those two guys are back, what's that going to mean for Jason Tatum? What's that going to mean for Jaylen Brown? They're going to have the ball less. Well, that's fine. They were kind of efficient players anyway. They get to their spots. But it's Marcus Smart that's going to suffer without the ball in his hands more, because, like we've been saying, you know, on the perimeter, if teams aren't going to respect him at all, that's a problem.
I agree. Just a reminder, all the listeners out there, dial our toll-free call line 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Jack, we've got a weird Celtics Twitter member on the line right now. Brian, L Dude, what do you got for us?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
What's going on, man?
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, this game. Hey, what's up, fellas? So, like, this game, I think one thing that I still think there's, obviously, they're trying to gel. One thing I thought was missing from the offense was a lot of ball movement. They're really kind of settling for post-ups a lot of times. And for the Raptors, it's kind of deceptive to try to go for those post-ups because Kyle Lowry is thick as hell. so, you know, that's kind of an issue. The other thing I want to bring up is Raptors look better than I thought they would. Kind of forgot that that Kawhi is really good. And Danny Green is no slouch. I was kind of annoyed seeing him hit those threes. And this was just one of those games I thought every time that we're going to shoot a three, that, oh, shit, like, we're going to miss this three. And then every time the Raptors had a three, I'm like, oh, great, they're going to make this three. Even though the stats say that we actually had more threes. So, just one of those nerve-wracking games. And, yeah, definitely think top two kind of tier teams in the East, Celtics, Raptors. And then I think Philly might be kind of down with Milwaukee and Indiana at this point, especially if they have more depth issues than us or Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the call, Brian. I think Brian made a good point with the – I don't know if I agree necessarily with the lack of ball movement. I thought in the first half especially they were moving the ball well. But I think it was more of a problem of they weren't knocking down shots. And at the end of the game, they were. Hayward started hitting that, you know, little curl off the screen and hit that jump shot. And then, you know, Kyrie started to get to his spot. He had one where he got by the guy, attacked his front foot like he normally does, but then pulled back with his left and hit the jump shot. And normally that's the ball that he takes and lays in with the left and does something crazy to get the other side of the rim. He's the rim as protection. So once I saw that, I was like, all right, Kyrie's in his bag. Like, 21 points isn't in his bag, Kyrie, but it's still, like, that's Kyrie. He'll be fine. One guy that I'm not nervous about because he's too good for me to be nervous about, and I think it's a tired conversation that's been had this offseason, and I don't love diving into it. Some of the stuff that Jason Tatum did tonight on the offensive end, granted, the kid's 20, but some of it, one possession, you know, I can't remember exactly who it was. Someone came out on him. He took the dribble, came back, and then he had a wide-open three, but then used the screen to get the long two, and that possession reminds me a lot of one Kobe Bryant, which scares me. And then Jason, like, the guy's fine. He hit that one-legged three at the end of the first quarter. Like, the dude's fine. I'm not complaining at him, but then, like, another one, he's got that fast break layup at the end of the game. Kyrie's running to the corner. Jason's got three trail defenders on him and still tries to lay it up, gets blocked by Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. When I'm not saying, you know, he's the best passer in the world, but you've got two guys on you. That means Kyrie's open in the corner, kick it out, you know, get within a couple more points. it's just, you know, a nitpick complaint, but I think it was something that I'm going to keep my eye on from here. And it's not to say that because he trained with Kobe in the offseason, he's going to play like Kobe. I don't think Brad Stevens will allow that. I don't think that's in Jason Tatum's nature to be the ball hog that Kobe is. But I think you're seeing a second-year guy who had a really good first year, and he feels himself from time to time, and I think it's all about playing within yourself.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of a larger indictment on the team tonight. I think as a team, there were way too many mid-range shots. Like, I think just the – like, I wasn't necessarily upset with the actual shots themselves. I just think kind of the mix of shots has to be better, as in, like, maybe don't dribble in, you know, a foot in to take a mid-range. And if a guy's closing out on you, maybe, you know, do a sidestep. Last year, Jason, even early in the season, in the first couple games, he had gotten that sidestep three down, and, you know, he was leading the league in three-point percentage, you know, for the first maybe half of the season. But like I said, you know, Marcus Morris had one where he was in the corner. I think OG Anunoby closed out on him, jumped way past him. He took a step in and nailed a mid-range shot. You know, I'm not upset with that shot. It's just that, you know, maybe don't do that every time. Like, I felt in the first half we weren't getting into the paint as much. I felt that Jason especially was settling. There was one sequence where he had back-to-back post-ups. The first one was on Pascal Siakam. He took a fading, like, Dirk shot, you know, with his leg up. He missed it. And then our next possession down, he got the same post up in the same spot on Kyle Lowry and went to the exact same move and missed it. So, you know, like I said, I don't necessarily hate the shot. It's just that I'd like to try to see him maybe do something different in that same scenario for the second possession in a row with a shorter guy on him.
Right. And I think he deserves – to ISO when he feels he can ISO. He's a good enough player and showed enough to me last year, and especially in the postseason, that he's good enough to dance with somebody if he can dance with somebody. But when it's not going for you, I mean, you've got a lot of talented guys around you. Dance with someone and kick to the corner. Dance with someone and get to the rim instead of pulling back. He loves that step back, Dirk fadeaway. But, you know, mix it up. Like you said, I like the point you made about, you know, mixing shots. Because tonight it felt like they go on these runs where it's just the same shot, you know, five or six possessions in a row. Like, it'll be a couple long twos, a couple, you know, mid-range jumpers from Hayward, and then it's a bunch of transition threes, and then it's a bunch of guys attacking the paint. It's not a consistent mix, and this team's good enough, and they can do so many things. Mostly everybody, you know, who's an offensive threat in this team can attack the can get buckets at all three levels. So I'd like to see more of that. I don't want to get too up or too down on the second game of the season. Obviously, it felt like not like a playoff game, but there was an intensity level that matched a playoff game in parts of this game. So I don't want to overreact. I don't want to underreact. But I really like you said the mixture of shots. I hadn't thought of it like that. I just thought that they missed a lot of open shots or took maybe had better shots and took some bad shots that they could have made better shots. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said they need to mix it up. And at some point, they were mixing up, and some of the shots just weren't falling. I mean, Baines had a bunch of rebounds tonight that, you know, he couldn't get the tip to go, and he freaked out under the basket after one of them. He missed, I think, two tips, and then just kind of, like, crouched over and just screamed. And obviously, he does a lot of screaming
from
Baines. But I had never seen, like, a frustrated, like, I can't get a tip to go kind of thing. And Jalen had a similar one under the rim where the offensive rebound came right to him, and he missed a tip. So I think it was a combination of that lack of mixture, and then just missing shots that you got to make in pro games.
Yeah, and I think that can kind of be considered another kind of team-wide struggle tonight. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like I said before, it does seem like we struggled as a team in the paint tonight, and maybe that did contribute to kind of more settling on the perimeter, settling for those mid-range shots. But you know, I think you have to kind of, my opinion on that is you kind of have to stay the course. Just, you know, next time you go up for a layup, just go up strong. But, yeah, Baines, he did seem kind of frustrated. But something I also do want to talk about with him is he did still play really well on the defensive end. He's still, you know, he's still kind of that guy from last year who, you know, he led the league in defensive rating last year. He's still, you know, he's still going to contribute on that end. So I'm not going to, you know, get too upset if he misses a couple tips here and there.
Oh, no. I think Aaron Baines is a wildly important piece of this team. I talked a lot about it during the preseason on a couple shows I did. But when he checks in, he allows so much to happen because he's obviously just a rock in the middle on defense. And he's not like a slouch offensively. You know, he's good for a three a game. And most of the time, he's good to catch a lob, dunk it, and get some of those offensive boards and put them back. But what he does on defense outside of his individual play is he allows Al to play the four, which I think is more of his natural position. And he allows everyone to funnel things into the middle. So, you know, like, we've got a bunch of great perimeter defenders and, you know, Jalen and Terry and Marcus and all those guys. But if they get burned by one step, you've got that rock in the middle that's ready, you know, to help. Play that help defense. And I'm not talking about get across the paint help defense. I'm talking literally just, like, help the guy out if he gets burned a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think Daniel Tice didn't play at all tonight. But last season, I think one of the biggest things that affected the Celtics when Tice went down is that he couldn't spell Baines. And at the end of the season, Baines, I don't think, had the bounce or the energy that he had at the beginning of the season. Obviously, he was still the top-rated defensive player in the league, so I'm not going to say he fell off at all. But I think when Baines comes in to allow Horford to play his natural position and then Tice comes behind Baines to spell Baines, I think that's the optimal situation for the Celtics. And so, like you said, I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain too much about Aaron Baines. I wasn't a huge fan of him in the beginning of last season because I was like, all right, what's this guy doing? And then you watch night in and night out, and he's impressive. And he was impressive on the defensive end tonight. He's just a big body who's not afraid of anything.
Yeah, and he really did, like, you know, for the most part, obviously not tonight, he is really kind of just a poised player who's not going to, you know, he doesn't make mistakes too often. So I know we've been going on about Baines a lot, but, you know, he is really, you know, a great guy to have. And I think you bring up a good point with the Tice thing. I also do think that, you know, this isn't necessarily the best game for a guy like Tice.
Oh, no.
Because Ibaka is a perimeter player at this point who's going to, you know, count, most of his boards are going to be running in, getting a board and getting putbacks, or, you know, he'll muscle through a guy. And, you know, Tice is a great, you know, not a great player, but he's a very good player. But, you know, him banging with Valanciunas isn't necessarily the position I want him to be in either. So, you know, like, it was a tough game, obviously, for Baines. Like, he didn't play too well on the offensive end. He played well enough on the defensive end, but I don't think Tice would have really been able to remedy that a lot.
No, and I think I was talking more in just general terms for how the season normally goes on. I wasn't talking about tonight because I'm glad that this team is good enough and deep enough to let Tice recover. He tore his ACL pretty late in the season. And even though medicine is, you know, wildly advanced these days, the guy still tore one of the most important ligaments in your knee. I don't want him out there banging around, like you said, with Valanciunas and Ibaka on a half-bum knee.
I think it was a torn meniscus, actually.
You're right.
Still important. Still bad injury.
Feel free, yeah.
Like, I would...
Yeah, so, like, what I was talking more in general terms for the entire season. Like, last year when Titans were able to play together in games throughout the entire season, I think Baines had a lot more of the energy to be the best player he can be. And when Tice went out, I think Baines, a lot more load ended up on his shoulders. So he couldn't get the minutes, or he couldn't get the rest he needed to be the best Aaron Baines. He played fine in the playoffs, but I that was a more of a long-term comment. I'm hoping, you know, when Tice is back to 100%, that's how it can be, because the puzzle pieces that fit together with this team, when they fit perfectly, the team is very good. And even when they don't fit perfectly, the team is very good. Obviously, it's more optimal to have them all fitting how they should. And one of the biggest puzzle pieces for this team is Gordon Hayward. He struggled in the first game. He struggled in the preseason. Tonight, he came out and looked a little bit like the Gordon Hayward of old. You know, 14 points, 7 rebounds. He shot 46.2% on the field. He hit 1-3. I guess probably because I didn't watch a ton of Utah Jazz basketball. But you kind of forget how big this guy is just as a human and how smooth he is. Obviously, you see the clips of him playing at Butler. Everyone talks about, Indiana high school basketball, high basketball IQ. But when you see it in a big game like this, when he's able to be that first option like he was for, I think it was like a 5-minute stretch right in the beginning of the fourth, end of the third maybe, this guy's a weapon. And besides it just feeling super good to see him out there playing basketball at a high level, some of the stuff he did tonight shows you how dangerous of a weapon he could be for the Celtics.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing that stood out to me, at least in, you know, these post-injury games, is he's not taking bad shots. He's never going to take a shot that he's uncomfortable with, whether it be, you know, uncomfortable ankle-wise or uncomfortable basketball-wise, but he's just not taking any bad shots. All of the shots that he took, you know, I'm especially more forgiving of him for taking those little mid-range shots just because he hasn't played in, you know, forever. But, you know, he's just seems so poor. Like, he really is the perfect Brad Stevens player in that he just never seems, you know, like he's pressing too much, or he never seems, you know, like the moment is too big for him. Granted, in his Celtics career, he hasn't really had, you know, the chance to be in games with big moments, but the point stands. It just seems that, you know, he doesn't make those mistakes. Him and Al Horford are kind of similar in that way. And, like, I don't know. I think the athleticism is going to come back. That Utah Jazz, Gordon Hayward, is going to come back eventually.
Good choice.
I'm not too Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not too worried about that. Just because it takes time, and with ankles especially, you know, it's basically all your weight or half your weight that's going on one little, tiny little, you know, part of your body. So it'll take time. But something I wanted to bring up, kind of about the game in general, is I think even though there was that big collapse, obviously at the end of the game where we gave up what, a 12-0 run or a 10-0 run within a span of 2 minutes. Yeah, so even though that happened, I thought in the first half and for a lot of the second half, especially in the half court, but, you know, it's sometimes in transition as well, the defense just really did look like it did last season. And that was something I was worried about, you know, with Kyrie coming back and with Gordon coming back, you know, maybe not at 100% or maybe not as crisp as he was last year. I thought, especially in the first quarter, the half court defense was just really, really good. And I spoke about it a little bit with Kawhi before, how Jalen was sticking with him. You know, he was still getting to his spots, but it seemed to be that Jalen really was affecting him. And Al is still, you know, switching out onto guys on the perimeter and doing, you know, enough of a good job on them that they're missing shots, or he's affecting the shots enough. So that's just something I really noticed that I was really encouraged by in this game.
I agree. You and I were texting in the first half about it, and there were a couple times when, you know, a rotation or a screen switch would get messed up and a guy would have a wide open three. But outside of that, the half court defense looked really good. I mean, Kawhi struggled to get anything going in the first half. He had 9 points. And like you said, he was getting to his spots, but Jalen just wasn't letting him knock down the shots he's accustomed to. Granted, Jalen got switched off of him pretty early in the game. And then Hayward, like we also talked about, he had a couple possessions, but for the most part, he didn't guard him, you know, particularly well. And then Al had him locked up on the perimeter a couple times. And that's not surprising to me anymore, because we've seen Al year in and year out play defensive player of the year type defense. But I think I was also concerned this offseason about the direction of the defense. Not necessarily because of a change in talent, but teams, when they get good and when they're supposed to be good, I think they play with less urgency than they did on the come up. And defense is a lot about urgency. And I there were a couple lapses tonight where I was like, all right, there was one free throw that came off the rim, went through Jalen's legs. I think Fred VanVleet picked up the board and, you know, gave Toronto an extra possession.
Oh, he went rolling around. Yeah.
But besides that, I mean, this team still plays with that defensive fire, and they take it as a personal challenge to guard whoever's across from them. The only person who really struggles with that, and it hurts me to say it, is Kyrie. Couple times tonight, he got lost on screens or just got, you know, got taken down low by a bigger player and scored on. I've had a thought for a while, and obviously I'm not going to compare the Celtics to the Golden State Warriors, but with the defensive talent they have, I think that Steph Curry has played almost like a quarterback role on defense for that team a lot of the time. He gets hidden on the opponent's worst offensive player, and he kind of, it's not that he runs everything, because Draymond obviously is the epicenter of that. But he's such a smart defender, and I think Kyrie's capable of playing a similar role where he's hidden on the other team's worst offensive player, but he's still always in the correct position and doesn't necessarily get put in the terrible spot that Kyrie was put in tonight. I'd love for the Celtics to achieve, you know, a level of defense where that's a thing, and where maybe Kyrie affects games like Steph with a bunch of steals. I'm not talking crazy numbers, but I think that could be an interesting situation. I wonder if that's a thought that goes through Brad's mind, where Kyrie's a smart enough basketball player where he knows he's not the best defender in the world, but he also knows that he can do things to get around that. So I'm hoping we get to a point where he's not getting torched in the pick and roll by a Kawhi Leonard type player.
Yeah, and I might be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure that Kyrie actually started out guarding Siakam. And
yeah.
There were a couple great possessions where, you know, Siakam backed Kyrie down. He got into the paint, and Kyrie, you know, he held his ground and he forced a miss.
Right.
So
yeah,
I was encouraged.
He just punched out of pants.
Mm-hmm. I was encouraged by that. And then he also did get a, you know, I think it was in transition, so I don't want to necessarily give him all the credit, but I think he got a block on Kyle Lowry that was ended up calling it a foul. But I think to your point about how the Warriors do it, it's kind of how, you know, how people thought Kelly Olynyk was a good defender when he was on the Celtics, because he was just in the right place at the right time in that team defensive scheme. And I think it, you know, against most teams, you know, hiding Kyrie isn't going to be as much of an issue, because it's not going to be on a guy that's, you know, Pascal Siakam, you know, he's a good player, but, you know, he's better, I would say, than most fifth guys, you know, in the Eastern Conference especially,
sure,
but also in the league. So, you know, it, like you said, it's going to be a problem against the Warriors. It's going to be a problem against the Raptors. But, you know, I think we have enough time before it's going to become a real problem in the playoffs. To where, you know, it may not necessarily be a point of emphasis right now. Something that I did notice, though, on the defensive end that was, you know, on the negative side, was the biggest lapse that I saw last year in the playoffs. What we did whenever Terry would get switched onto a big man is before they can make the entry pass to that big guy, Terry would dart out, switch onto a small player, and then whoever was on the weak side would come in and switch onto him, mostly Al. So Al would get in on the big man.
Right.
It was like a whole flurry of switches that was happening. So tonight, Terry got switched onto, I think it was Ibaka. Terry darted out, Al darted down to get Ibaka, and then Terry and Gordon were on the wing, and they mixed up who they were going to switch on to. Gordon wanted Terry to go onto Kawhi, and Gordon was going to stay on Danny Green. So they took basically just a split second longer than they needed to. And Danny Green was able to just run to the other corner and get a wide open three. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing, you know, at least for the beginning of the season, is kind of getting Gordon acclimated to, you know, how the switches are going to work, how the defense is going to work. Because if we are going to defend like we did in the playoffs last year, which is going to try to prevent, you know, getting a guard switched onto a big guy, then those switches on the wing or those switches on the weak side are going to be, you know, monumentally important.
I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, the way you laid out that example was really good, because you look at that matchup where it would be where Gordon was covering Danny Green and Terry was covering Kawhi. Even the most casual basketball fan automatically thinks, well, that should be switched. You know, forward on forward, guard on guard. But, you know, there's intricacies and nuances to defense that Gordon – He didn't play all of last year. He hasn't been there when the chips are down and when everyone's flying around, and you have to make those split-second decisions, and, you know, missing that decision by even half a second leads to a Danny Green corner three. So I think you're right. I think communication and improved communication will obviously remedy those issues, and I'm excited to see that happen. If there's any coach that will make it happen, it's Brad Stevens. Another thing that I'm very interested in seeing how Brad handles, we kind of talked about it earlier with Smart, is just who plays when. Because at the end of last season, even before Kyrie's injury, you had an idea of the five or six guys who were going to be on the floor in crunch time. Like, it was going to be Kyrie, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and then one of Rozier, Smart, or Morris. This year, there's eight guys all vying for five spots, but each of them feels like they deserve to be out there just as much as the other. And obviously, you ride hot hands, but If you're switching out, so say, you know, Tatum has 5 fouls and you're in the third quarter, who are you putting in? Obviously, game situations are different, but who's the first guy off the bench for you when you need to play your best?
Say one more time. You kind of cut out for a second there.
Oh, sorry about that. Who is your first guy off the bench? I'm not talking six man. I'm talking crunch time. You need, so say, you know, one of the forwards, Brown or Tatum's in foul trouble. Who are you bringing off the bench?
I mean, I would normally say Marcus Smart. That would be, you know, pretty much up to last year, you know, that would be my instant, you know, answer would be Marcus Smart. But I do think, you know, and this is what your question is leading into. It is a difficult decision, because then you have Terry Rozier, who's going to be on offense. You know, he's going to be a plus on offense and a plus on defense. And Marcus Smart maybe necessarily is not necessarily always going to be that plus on offense. So you are right in that it's a very difficult decision, but I'm still sticking with Marcus Smart. I'll stop there because I'll say it depends on who's, you know, who we were taking out. If, like you said, if it's Jalen or Jason, I'd definitely probably put in Marcus Smart. But if it's, you know, Al, I'd probably have to say Baines. But you see what I'm getting at.
It's an extremely hard decision because the second unit, I'm not saying they're as good as the first unit in the NBA, but they're as good as some first units in the NBA, and they're all five of them are deserving of being on the floor in crunch time. But you've got the very clear best five on the team. And tonight, the reason I bring this up is that sometimes the ball was moving around in a way that just didn't make a ton of sense. They're fine passes and fine looks. But last year, it was, all right, Kyrie, bring the ball up, and he's going to make something happen. You know, spread it however it's going to happen. But there was always a rhyme or reason. These past two games, and especially tonight, it didn't feel like there was the rhyme or reason that we got so accustomed to last year. And like you and I have both reiterated plenty of times tonight, you've got a lot of new moving parts. There's a lot of moving parts in general, so you have to figure out a way to make that a cohesive unit. But I'm very interested to see how it works because they say you can never have too much talent, and I agree. If you look at the best teams ever, they've been loaded with talent. But it's tough because all these guys are so talented and so deserving of playing in crunch time and good on offense and good on defense and fine ball handlers and good passers. That I have no idea. I have no idea who the crunch time five is if it's not just the standard starting five.
Yeah, and that's also not to say that the standard starting five isn't a great unit to put out there. So
right, exactly.
You know, I've said it a lot. I'm happy with the decisions that Brad makes. You know, if he puts in Terry over Kyrie Irving, I'll be like, yeah, you know what? That's probably a good decision based on, you know, how this game has been going. If he puts in, you know, Aaron Baines over Al Horford, I'll probably say, yeah, you know what? Brad has never really made a roster decision or I guess a sub decision.
Personnel, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that I've said, you know, what the hell are you doing? Like, what's going on here? So, you know, and we said the hot hand. We've said, you know, if a player is not struggling or if a player is struggling, blah blah blah. And you know, there are a ton of reasons that are going to go into it. But it at the end of the day, it really is just what's the best lineup that's going to help us win a basketball game. And sometimes you have to match up based on your opponent, but also sometimes you just have to put in your best five, and that is the starting five.
It's strange to be talking like this and have this feeling because for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, the Celtics have been just that. It's like, you know, there's so many moving parts, you know, mix and match, however you got to do it, win how you got to win. You know, no one got too hurt. No one was too up. No one was too low. But now you've got a lot of implications with almost every move throughout the game. And it's a foreign feeling. Like, you've got these contract situations with Kyrie and Terry. You've got, you know, playing time stuff between other guys. You've got two young forwards who are looking to take that next step. It's all very interesting. And I, for one, am wildly interested to see how Brad handles this all season because outside of, like, everything I just mentioned, there's egos. And no matter how many times guys say, I check my ego at the door, it's all about winning. You can't put all that aside. And I'm not saying anyone on this team has an ego problem. But I'm saying, like, I just don't know how this is going to go. And tonight made me really think about it because, like, on the bench at the end of the fourth quarter when last year that just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, like it is weird thinking about it because I tend to err on the side of like, you know, I don't care about the egos. Like I just don't take it into account when I'm thinking about, you know, who's going to go on the floor at the end of games. Like which may be a flawed position to have. Like I might be totally wrong on that. And, you know, every second that Terry is sitting on the bench, you know, is another $1 million that he's not going to get in the off season, which, God, I hope that doesn't happen. I want him to get $20 million somewhere. But beside the point, yeah, so, like, you know, like I said, it might be just the optimistic fan in me where I'm just sitting here thinking, like, oh, yeah, these guys are happy as long as we get the win. Like, Marcus Smart, you know, he just got $13 million. You know, he knows that he's a part of this team's future. Like, he shouldn't be, you know, really worried that he's not – finishing out games, especially if he's struggling, or even if he isn't struggling, he should know that, you know, Brad's doing what's best for the team. So it is sometimes a difficult decision to make, like we've been, you know, repeating over and over again at this point, but it is an important point that we're making, is that, you know, players aren't just robots that go out there and don't have feelings. Like, these are guys that have feelings. These are guys that have brains. These are guys that, you know, are prideful basketball players. Like, they work their whole lives to get to these points. So it's not, so to not finish out games when they feel like they are is, you know, sometimes it hurts guys, and that's completely understandable.
Yeah, it's just, like you said, we've been repeating it, and I've been, you know, probably doing a poor job of, you know, figuring things out, but it's just, like, I sit here and I watch that game, and I can't find the perfect solution in my head when, for the past, you know, really since the Isaiah trade, that first playoff, you know, that first playoff appearance against the Cavs in, what was that, 2015? I don't have the obvious solution, you know, at the front of my brain, and it takes a lot of thought. And then, like, with all that thought, you still come to the conclusion, like, it's going to be hard. I'm curious, how fast do you think Hayward progresses? Like, at what point this season do you think the minutes restriction comes off? At what point do you think we see maybe not 100%, but 90% of the athleticism back?
Yeah, so I'll speak. So if you follow me on Twitter, you might know I've had, you know, a bunch of pretty bad ankle injuries in the past couple of years. The second one being last January, and that one was, you know, the bad one. But it took me, and obviously mine wasn't as bad as Gordon's, but it took me, you know, a couple months. It took me about a month to get back to playing, a little more than a month to get back to playing basketball. And then it took me, you know, several more months to even get back to my, you know, the athleticism that I had before the injury. And that was with physical therapy. That was with, you know, rehab and everything. And obviously Gordon, his injury was worse, but he also has access to, like, the best doctors in the world. And luckily for him, he didn't have any, you know, tendon or ligament damage. So it really depends, because he's kind of like at this point where it looks like he's maybe like 80% athleticism, and it's just like maybe he hasn't played at the NBA speed in a long time, and that's kind of what's getting to him. But then you see him play tonight, and he looks totally calm out there, and it's like, oh, like he looks like he was for at least, you know, a couple minute stretches, the player he was before, one of the best players on the floor. So I think Brad had said, and I might be wrong on this, but I think Brad had said it was going to be a couple weeks for the minutes restriction, and I would probably agree with that. Like, once he gets, you know, more of these game reps in, and I think we have an easy point in the schedule coming up soon. I think we have Knicks, then Magic. So, you know, these games are going to have to kind of be opportunities for Gordon to go up against, you know, maybe, you know, not Kawhi Leonard and be able to get to his spots more and be able to get good shots off and be able to kind of, you know, get back to NBA speed before, you know, before the playoff time. But I would assume by playoff time he'll be better anyway, so.
Yeah, I think obviously by playoffs he'll be fine. And like, I'm not asking you to, you know, predict the medical future of a player. I just think it's an interesting thing to talk about, because as we spoke about at length, the team is so deep, so talented that right now they have the luxury of bringing Gordon back on this 25 minutes a game restriction. Like, a lot of other teams rush guys back because they need them. This team doesn't necessarily need him out there. And tonight, I thought it was really, really creative of Brad to start Marcus Morris at the beginning of the second half for, I think it was probably about, you know, 9 or 10 minutes, and then bring Hayward back for a stretch, put him on the bench, then bring him back, I believe, again, to end the fourth. So you play him his handful of minutes in the first half, you know, 10, 12 minutes in the first half, then get him, you know, the same, you know, 12, 13 minutes in the second half, but wait until the fourth quarter when you need it most. So I think that's a creative strategy that Brad employed tonight, and obviously, it's subject to change when Gordon comes off that minutes restriction. But I think that I've been pretty negative all night with this game. Not necessarily, like, wildly negative, but more negative than optimistic. And I'm trying to, you know, end the show on a positive note, because, after all, this was the second game of the year, and I'm not going to freak out and, you know, blow anything up in my head because of the second game of the year. But I think just looking at that in – You look at the depth, and you look at all the issues that I've had with how are you going to play everybody, but then you look at the bright side of that. That's, they're deep enough to bring Gordon Hayward, an all-star caliber player, and one of the better players on the team, back at his own pace. and stuff like that is promising. And even, like, I nitpicked a lot about Tatum earlier with some offensive possessions, but just the fact that the guy's 20 out there, you know, covered by some of the better defenders in the league, and he's got the guts to, you know, go right to left through his legs, behind his back, and shoot that fadeaway, like, I'll live with it. I'll live with it. I mean, the guy showed me enough. So yeah, I think we'll wrap this one up here. Oh, all right, you go ahead, man.
Yeah.
I'm just rambling at this point.
No worries. I was just gonna say really quick, like, I'm kind of lucky enough to where I'm more on the optimistic side usually. So I mean, I don't think you were too negative. Like, I think, you know, by the end of that game, you know, watching a 10-0 run with 2 minutes to go when your team is right there isn't great. So I don't think it's not a bad thing to be negative. Like, there are bad things that happen, but, you know, the flip side of that is obviously, like, it's the second game, still at 25 minutes. And like you had said, you know, with the luxury of bringing him back, bringing an all-star back at his own pace, like, every minute extra that he's going to play is going to be, you know, let's just say, like, one less minute of Marcus Morris, which, you know, I would necessarily not like that to happen because I like Marcus Morris, but, you know, there were points last year where he would be hijacking possessions, et cetera, and, you know, every shot that he takes, if that was a Gordon Hayward shot last year, you know, think about where the team would have been last year. So, like you said, it's a luxury, and it's going to be a great season. So,
yeah, and like I don't think I, like I said, I don't think I was wild negative, and I do tend to err on the optimistic side of things, but I think that that flurry, that 10-0 run was like, it was tough to swallow, man.
Oh, man.
Like, the Celtics,
oh, man.
They kept doing that, like, Celtics thing where they'll come within three, within two, and then go back to five, but then hit a big shot, and you're like, all right, well, I've seen enough Celtics basketball the past year to know the Celtics are going to make this a game. And then all of a sudden, what the Celtics normally do to other teams where they go on these improbable 10-0 runs, the Raptors did to them. Yeah. It was just in the worst way. It was with dagger threes, and then, you know, Kawhi misses a layup, and you're like, okay. And then Ibaka catches a rebound and dunks it. So I think that's where, you know, that's fueling some of the nitpicking and negativity I've had tonight. Just to look forward, the Celtics do have the Knicks tomorrow night. Andrew Rubino and Joe Choquet will have the post-game show. That's all I've got. You got anything else for the last 2 minutes, Jack?
Not really. That's pretty much it.
I mean, yeah, we had a lot to talk about. Hopefully we get some more callers in the near future. But for now, I'm Taylor McLeod. That's Jack Michael. Raptors 113, Celtics 101 tomorrow night. Here, Andrew Rubino and Joe Choquet break down Celtics-Knicks. For CLNS Media and the Celtics post-game show, signing off.